Bing Bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got my man, Carr, the CEO of PlebLab. They are currently doing a Top Chef of sorts, but for builders in the Bitcoin space, called Top Builder. Be sure to check them out on all social media platforms at PlebLab on everywhere you get social media, I guess, Instagram even. But especially Noster and Twitter, so be sure to check them out there. We talk about the ETF. We just had an instant reaction from when that was passing. We talk about building in a bear market and seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So it's a great episode. But as always, ladies and gentlemen, this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast should not be taken as financial advice. Also, the Bitcoin Advisor. That's the Bitcoin Advisor. advisor.com/greencandle. You can set an appointment with me. We can help you out with estate planning, getting a collaborative custody model. If you want to plan for your estate to donate to a church or a cause that you care about in the an event of your passing, contact me and we can get an appointment set at the bitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle. And shout out to Hodler's Official, the number one jerseys in the game. They've got basketball and baseball jerseys. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your entire order. All right. And lastly, smash that subscribe button. Also, before I send off, I'm thinking about shooting this podcast over to the Macro Insights feed. So please check that out. I believe I'm going to do that in about a month or so. So check out the Macro Insights feed. I'm going to start posting them both on that Macro Insights feed. And I'll probably do that through the month of February and then go full time to the Macro Insights feed starting in March. So be sure to check that out and smash the subscribe over there so you know when new episodes are dropping for State of Bitcoin and the Macro Insights Pod. All right, now let's get into the episode. Bing Bong, I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man with the plan, recurring guest, Carr, coming to you.
A recurring guest?
Yeah, I think this is your second time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did interview you down in Austin in PlebLab in person, but this time we're doing it virtually. So thank you so much for joining me here. A little late night with a lot of craziness that went on today, right? I mean, we had the Bitcoin ETF. So, Carr, we made it, right? We're out of the bear market. How does it feel?
Feels like the bear market. Still feels like the bear market, right? I mean, what did we accomplish today as Bitcoiners?
Nothing.
I can't think of anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting day because I would love to hear from your perspective, because the only really, I guess, thing that I think the ETFs did, and, you know, we'll get into a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Go for it. Yeah.
On top of mind. But I think it just brings somewhat of validity or something. Like, maybe it brings, like, I guess the general feeling I felt on Twitter today was, you know, some people just felt validated, like, all right, like, I beat Wall Street, I beat BlackRock, I beat these guys to, you know, the hardest money in the world, the, you know, this great asset, you know, whatever you want to call Bitcoin at this point, depends, I guess, how you look at it. But, and I think that just kind of validated some of the hodlers that were maybe, I guess, a little skeptical or maybe not as fully like 2 feet in. But other than that, man, I agree with you. I think it was just, everybody's just waiting for the number to go up because of it.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on it and then we can kind of riff, but I think ultimately though, like I like to take a realistic and like wait and see kind of approach to most things. It's just the way I am, just fundamentally built like that. And I think when you look at it, it's like, okay, what did we really accomplish here? Cause neither side could agree on what they wanted, right? I think if you look at the traditional finance side, they didn't really want this ETF. Like, right? Like, do they really want it? Like, did they really want it? I don't know if they actually really did. And then you look on the Bitcoiner side and we didn't really want to give it to them either. So that's kind of where my kind of thing is just like, it's two different sides that didn't want to meet in the middle. Sure, I think it's going to help with long-term adoption. I think it'll lead to stability and all that stuff. I think I was looking at some charts today. They were saying it's going to be like 2 billion assets under management within the first 48 hours. And then they were saying like by the end of 30 days, it's going to be like 30 billion. or what was it, 5 billion AUM. And I'm just like, what? Like, is this real? Like, maybe. But I think for me as just a builder in the space, it's just like, okay, next day, clock in, let's just do this. Like, I don't know if it actually affects my day to day.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think it does. And I think all that was just rumors. Like, I mean, I think that like that's one thing that we learned in the past couple days, right? Because we're recording this on January 10th. On the 9th, you know, we had the fake tweet go out and you saw Bitcoin price shoot up a couple grand and then, you know, fall back down after, you know, Gensler said, oh, you know, our accounts, the SEC account has been hacked and everything on Twitter. And then, you know, today, then it got announced again. And, you know, we've just kind of seen the price fluctuate based on this kind of news, which seems a little fishy and seems like a little bit of market manipulation was going on. But, you know, maybe we could get the tinfoil hats on for that. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, exactly like you said, at the end of the day, if the SEC and if, you know, the NASDAQ or, you know, one of these major companies like wanted to have this Bitcoin spot ETF, it probably could have happened a long time ago. I mean, there's like 11 other countries that have had this before the United States. Obviously, the U.S. biggest amount of money, you know, kind of comes in and out of our, you know, traditional markets. But I think at the end of the day, like, you know, we didn't really want to give it to them. They kind of wanted to fight it. So regulators have always kind of wanted to fight it. And I think too now, like, it's like more of just rumors and like the plot of it all, I think, is what's more intriguing rather than like the number going to be going up because of, you know, there's billions of dollars left on the sideline. Like, I don't think that that's really the case. I mean, if there was really billions of dollars on the sidelines, realistically, like, MicroStrategy has been a spot ETF this whole time, right? With as much Bitcoin that they hold. And there's been other avenues. So I don't really think, you know, a lot of traditional finance has just been sitting on the sideline. And I don't really buy any of that at all. Yeah. I just think that's been a rumor. And that's been something that it's like, well, you know, there's so much money and it's just kind of like playing into the hype.
Yeah. And like what we'll see here, like, family offices do like 1 or 2% allocations. And then what, the Winklevoss tried to do this 10 years ago. Where are those guys at? Like, yeah. I don't know. I think, and just speaking realistically about this. Yeah. I'm super excited, super happy for the TradFi bros out there and all the people that worked really hard to get this pass, obviously. Right. It's good for Bitcoin adoption. It allows senior citizens to finally have it in their portfolio of a sort, I guess. But I think for me, the average, you know, millennial boomer, boomer, whatever we're calling ourselves now, like, it's just business as usual, right? And that's just kind of how I look at it. Like, we still got a long road ahead to get Bitcoin to even mass adoption, much less like, you know, I don't know. We have a long road ahead.
No, I agree with you too. I still think, you know, I mean, I always revert back to like, you know, El Salvador, right? El Salvador, perfect example. They've made Bitcoin legal tender, but if you go there, you know, kind of just anecdotally, what people say is about 10 to 15% of merchants have accept Bitcoin and it's legal tender there. It's been legal tender for 2 years, 10 to 15%. I don't want to undermine that. That's a significant amount because there's probably nowhere in the US where you could point to a specific city or even like a, you know, maybe even like a zip code or a neighborhood that 10 or 15% of the merchants accept Bitcoin. But, you know, it's still like a long way to go for adoption. But as a guy that's working in Pleb Lab with a lot of startups, here's where I think that this Bitcoin spot ETF helps you out a lot or helps, you know, startups. It adds validity in that respect where it's like traditional finance is already in it. Right. So now maybe some more VC money, some more people that are not just necessarily Bitcoin only are going to start to get, maybe I'll call it crypto curious, and kind of get back into Bitcoin. Do you think that that's going to be the case? Obviously, you got to project at this point because it happened today. But yeah.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, we saw this happening. I want to say like August, September, October of last year. Like, I started seeing just more people from the crypto Web3 space come over into Lightning and because of Nostr and some of these other intersecting technologies. I think here just locally at most of our meetups that we have around Central Texas, I've seen just more TradFi guys, whether those are just like people that are working for some small family offices or even some of these agency guys, right, that are just like doing some accounting stuff. they're all trying to figure out how to position themselves inside of this like ecosystem of builders and all that kind of stuff. So I've just seen that personally, just like the people that I have met. And then you also have just like, you know, the podcast number, right? Like even my personal podcast, I do spare time, like that one has seen increased downloads and increased things. Obviously with all the Plub Lab stuff that we have going on, all of these people are seeing the inbound too. So I think, yes, I think you're right. 100%. I think it's going to lead to more people interest being peaked. And I also think it's going to lead to more building and hopefully more, more allocation towards the builders in the space, because I don't think they get enough as it is. So
no, 100%. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we saw Dorsey like donate a bunch to Nostr Devs, and there's been some other like kind of philanthropic, I don't even know if that's the right word, but philanthropy or people donating to devs in the space, because obviously, you know, there's not a lot of just money circulating. So I think just making that, I guess, more accessible, right? I mean, bringing money into people who are, you know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of very talented devs out there, but you know, you got to make a living at some point in time. Yeah. Right?
So yeah. I was talking to Ben Woosley on the pod, and he was describing this very same thing. Like, you know, more actually, believe it or not, this is a fun fact, but Nostr devs get more funding than Bitcoin devs. it's interesting fact, right?
Why?
I don't know. It's just the way they've done their grant process. It just kind of leads to more Nostr devs getting created, which is cool. I think the other side, though, you are seeing like the VanEck, right? I think I don't know if it's out there publicly yet, but they were saying that they're going to give 5%. I guess all the money that they've earned from this ETF, 5% is going to go to Bitcoin devs, which is amazing, right? You also have people that are already out there doing this, like the Chainco Labs people. They just released a whole like protocol like developer thing. It's free, right? And that's funded, you know, by like what you're describing, right? Just philanthropy stuff. And so I think we'll see more of that kind of stuff. I think we'll see more of this happening, because there's far too, like, Bitcoin is far too important not to fund these people. And I actually think we'll get to a point, and this is like crazy car talking, but I actually think to a point we'll literally get to a point where you're going to have to pay these Bitcoin developers an insane amount of money for them to, you know, work with you or even be associated with you. I think it's going the way of like the NBA or like the NFL, where you're like signing contracts. I think that's how valuable these devs are. And I don't think people realize just how valuable they are. They're very valuable.
No, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's a skill.
Not only to Bitcoin, but to like anything and everything around them.
Well, I mean, I think it's just a skill that not very many people have, right? I mean, so when you have a skill that not very many people have and it turns out to be a necessity, you know, I mean, obviously like the NBA and all those kind of stuff, that's like entertainment skill that, you know, everybody probably wishes that they had, you know, like athletic ability. But
yeah, you know. Think about this, Brandon. Like, remember when Jordan was playing in the NBA, right? Like how much he had taken the NBA from the 80s till the end of the was it the 90s? Like it like had 10, 20X, whatever the size was. He didn't get a cut from the NBA. Like, I think he was the highest player at that time. Same thing with LeBron, like LeBron, Kobe, like they took it to another extreme when they, so I think the days of, you know, being able to, you know, do this stuff and not reap any benefits from a foundational level are gone. And I think Bitcoin just kind of is that thing that just kind of flips a lot of the stuff, where it just makes you look at things a little bit differently and a little bit more fairly, that brings value to everybody who's involved. I don't know. That's just where my mind is these days when I
think. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. But the one thing that I'll push back on that.
Yeah, go for it.
Is that the Bitcoin devs and like a lot of Bitcoiners just in general like to be extremely private. Whereas like, you know, the NBA and like all these athletes, they're like very much like, you know, they're on TV, they're in commercials, they're in your face. I mean, I would love to see like a Bitcoin dev like on a weeding
spot. Have you seen Super Testnet? He's like the most popular out there Bitcoin dev that I know.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's TikTok yet, but it's coming soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll get Super Testnet on a Wheaties box or something. I don't know, man. That would be pretty awesome. On
a Wheaties box, you never know. No, I'm kidding. I think what I've come to realize is most of these devs do want attention, right? And I think you're right. They do. You know, they do want their own privacy and stuff like that, but they do want the attention for their work, right? Rightfully so. Like, anybody wants their attention for their work, but I think Bitcoin devs don't get nearly as much attention as they probably should. And that's why we created PubLab, right?
So. No, 100%. And I think that's, you know, obviously that's why, you know, I love what you guys are doing down there. And I try to support you guys as much as I possibly can, because I mean, you know, I just the value of the dev space, it's just, I feel like it's completely just like undervalued, right? I mean, a lot of people, you know, they kind of go down the rabbit hole of, you know, maybe mining or the, you know, for the philosophical aspect of it, but the dev side of things, I think is extremely important. And I think that's the most important aspect to get moving for adoption, because, you know, I had Isabella and Julian on our pod or on my pod maybe a couple of weeks ago now at this point, but they went to Peru. And one question that Isabella raised was like, do you think we're ready for Bitcoin to onboard 8 billion people at this point? And, you know, it's kind of been a question that stuck with me, because I personally don't think we're really ready for that yet. I think that there's a lot of bugs in Lightning. I think, you know, the fees kind of aspect of it right now is probably a little bit too high on chain. So, but I mean, as somebody that, you know, interacts with a lot of devs, where do you think the shortcomings are right now? And like, obviously you see a lot of stuff that's building, and like, where do you think, if you had to project out, like, do you think, you know, is it like a 5-year deal? Do you think it's like a 10-year deal, until we're ready for, you know, the whole globe to be onboarded? Yeah. Like, where do you think it's at?
Yeah, I can't really give you a date or like one of those things. I can tell you where the pain points are just seeing it on the front lines. I think the biggest pain point is just most of these people who are in charge of like, or not in charge, that's the wrong word, or who contribute to this Lightning ecosystem are either underpaid, not valued, or they don't have any funding to do this FOSS-wise. And I think that's what I see time and time again, is those three things. And then the fourth one is just they get no due. Like, no one's out there saying these amazing things about them and what they created. There's just no one doing that. You know, I think we try our best to, and this is because we're still severely understaffed here at PubLab, but we try our best to push all these people's projects and everything that they're building and try to give them the limelight as many times, as many possible chances as we can. But even with that, it's still not enough. And so that's where I would say it's just the lack of funding to help these people, the lack of funding for them themselves, the underpaid process of it. And then also just, you know, some of these big, because a lot of what you see in the Bitcoin ecosystem, it's all shared intellectual capital that they're all sharing with amongst each other. Right. And so a lot of these, I just wrote an article about this very same thing. And in the article, I describe like this intellectual capital that's shared amongst all these Bitcoin companies, but they all have to have it in some way or another. And the ideas of these things have to, that's how you measure some of this stuff. And some of these ideas already been happening prior in 2018 or even before then. And then they get reimagined for this new era, 2022. And I think just allowing teams to experiment is probably the first thing they need to do. It's just give them enough funding, enough runway so they can go experiment. And I'm talking about all the open source stuff, you know, whether it's like Core Lightning, you know, LND, right? Just like anything and everything that could possibly use help, right? It's just like help those teams who are severely, you know, either understaffed or just don't have enough money to bring on open source contributors who are out there and ready to start making a difference. So that's kind of what I see over and over again. It's just like those kind of pain points, but hopefully I described that pretty well. I don't know if I did.
You did. And, you know, I think like one hurdle that I can see now that, you know, traditional finance might start to come in and for that funding aspect is the free and open source aspect of things, because, you know, traditionally in business, like in the US, it's been kind of this cutthroat mindset, right? Like you can't let anybody know your secrets or, you know, how you did something, what your business plan is, like everything needs to be behind closed doors. But Bitcoin's very different in that space, right? I mean, the free and open source movement is great. And it kind of lets the cream rise to the top, right? If you had some error, or if you could do something a little bit better, more efficient, that way, that solution will probably be the one that ends up winning out. But, you know, in that aspect of things, like if a traditional finance person were to come in and kind of, I guess, question you or maybe push back on the free and open source aspect of Bitcoin and a lot of these developers, how would you, I guess, reply to that as to, you know, the benefits of it and kind of, you know, I guess just the benefits.
I can just give you examples. And I think that'll better explain it, right? Like you have somebody like Stacker News, Keon, who's like Foss, who's out there, has a project that he's raised money on. Also is completely open sourced it all. It's out there if you want to run your own Stacker News or whatever. And yet he's still able to maintain whatever, you know, trajectory that he's headed towards, right? Or path or milestone. Same thing with the Mutiny guys. Mutiny guys are doing all this free and open source. You could literally run your own Mutiny node, right? And then be able to do everything that the Mutiny guys are doing. So that's where I would push back. I'd be like, hey, there's total examples here. And a lot of it comes down to like reputational capital, right? You have like these people who have like this built-in trust over the course of these years of proof of work that they've all put in. There's that. There's also the small ecosystem that they all live in. So they all know more than likely what everybody's working on and that kind of thing. So there's really a lot of checks and balances there, more so on like an ecosystem community level. And it's just a really small community, this dev community. And so everybody knows everybody and that kind of thing. So that's where I would say is like, people know who need the most help. And that's the unfortunate thing is like most people realize like who does need the most help, but it usually takes a really long time for that to kind of go through because it's just like, it has to get to the top of whoever has that stack of Bitcoin that could help that person. So that's what I've seen over the course of my 2.5-3 years. It's just that type of thing. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
No, it answers the question. Definitely. I guess it's just, you know, the proof of work being put in too. So, you know, I guess because it's a tight knit group and, you know, everybody kind of understands what somebody's working on, like what those kind of things. Obviously, a place like PlebLab would be a great place to kind of come in and, you know, maybe get your feet wet, get some exposure to that. But, you know, outside of, that, is there other like avenues and channels that a dev, you know, I mean, you guys have some courses at PlebLab too, but, you know, some stuff that...
Yeah.
Stuff that somebody could do that wants to get started in being a dev.
There's so much now. When we got started in 2021, when we decided to do this whole PlebLab thing, there was, I don't know of anybody doing like any type of in-person thing or like education stuff other than Chaincode Labs, I think was the only one. And then even workshops. I don't remember ever seeing any workshops that were live or bringing people there. You know what I mean? Like there was TabConf and stuff like that, but there really wasn't a lot of places that I would say just for Bitcoin only, like Lightning only stuff. Now there's just like everything, anything and anything that you could, there's no excuse now not to be a dev. There really is it, dude. And so what's great about now is like you have like Bitcoin Plus Plus, right? It's a conference. That's a world conference. Probably going to come to your major city or country at some point in the near future. You also have, Pleb Devs, stuff that Austin is doing, right? He's doing that online. So there's no excuse for no one who doesn't want to learn how to code. He's literally doing it online every day. You also have Base 58. So like Chainco Labs, they also have like an academy that you can join and do classes. And there's Udemy. There's like all sorts of like online lessons and education stuff. Even Austin's doing that with his Pleb Dev stuff. TabConf is like a big, like, you know, premier, like, you know, like just conference for developers. And now they're starting to add more and more different types of discussions and stuff like that. So that's really cool. I think you even have Bitcoin conference, like give credit to Bitcoin conference. Like they do this every year where they have like startups come and pitch, even if it's only for like 2 hours or whatever, but they do their part. I think they had the Foss stage. I think it was a lot smaller this past year, but in years past, it's been bigger. You can literally go down the line. There's SatsConf that just happened here. And then there's just all these hacker spaces like PlebLab that are popping up everywhere, dude. There's some everywhere now. So there's really like now, like, dude, in 2021, when I looked out there and we were like, okay, how do we do this? Like, who's done this before? Who do we copy? There was no one to copy. It was just all from like our own minds of like how to do it. And luckily people saw what we were doing, two crazy guys in a field, you know, just dancing by themselves. And then everybody came over and started wanting to dance too. And then it became a whole revolution, right? And now you're seeing just more and more of these average Bitcoiners just like stepping up and doing what they need to do for their community. And that's the way. Like, it's this grassroots movement. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. It was always going to happen like this. If it wasn't me, it would have been somebody else. And it's just going to keep progressing, and it's unstoppable. Like, Bitcoin is unstoppable because it has all these like really cool, beautiful elements to it, right? It's like freedom. It's hope. It's what we want, you know, the future to be, because we see this beautiful mirror that the possibilities that could come from it. And when you have something like that's wrapped up like that into a culture that gives before they receive, it's really hard to not bet against that. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. And that's awesome. I love that, dude. Now you got me all fired up, man. I want to run through a raw wall or something. I mean, that was awesome. But I mean, you know, you're nailing it on the head too. And I just think like that aspect of the community is kind of, I guess, I don't want to say like undervalued or anything like that, but you know, maybe it's, yeah, you know, people just don't understand that the shadowy super coder, right? I mean, like everybody that I guess kind of got into Bitcoin at first, you know, probably has a little nerd to him, right? I mean, like we all kind of had that curiosity of that. And so maybe it like, you know, the shadowy super coder doesn't have the jock appeal or whatever it is. But I think that's going to start to change, right? I mean, I think, you know, the narrative around that is starting to be flipped. Like being a nerd is being cool now, dude. But so I think your comparison earlier about, you know, almost like an athlete kind of, you know, becoming, or maybe a Bitcoin dev kind of becoming in the limelight like an athlete might start to flip, because I think, you know, more and more.
Dude, Brandon, I've just seen it firsthand for close to 3 years at this point. Like I've seen these people go from like, you know, to now they've raised all this money and now they're super sick. Like I've seen that happen multiple times. Like this is not, you know, and that's not a measure of success by no means. I've seen people go the opposite way, like Super Testnet, where he just came in as this guy who wanted to build, you know, I don't know what, at that colored coin stuff at that time, like in early 21, and he was fiddling around with Noster and we wouldn't pay attention to him. And then now he's like this prolific guy who's building doom on freaking Bitcoin. Like, so I've seen every sort of different thing that's come to fruition. And honestly, like I can't wait to write the book, because it's going to be an epic book on like how like all these people came in and then now where they're at. And I still see it to this day. I still see it. I still see these people around me who just amaze me every single day when I look at what they're building or working on. Like Topher just created this whole Bit Escrow thing, and now he's like talking about it at Bit Devs and stuff. And it's just like, whoa, like, this is a guy I just go get lunch with, you know? Like that's what I'm trying to say. It's just like, I understand and appreciate these people, but I also think there's this great video that Jordan Peterson has. And I don't know if I've shared it yet online, but I should. But he talks about these like intellectual, like it has advice for hyper intellectual people. And he talks about how some people they just need to be around other hyper intellectual people, because that's the only way they're going to be able to function day to day. It's just like why a weightlifter hangs out with other weightlifters, or why like, you know, guys who love football go hang out at a bar together. It's because they have this passion and this need to talk about the things that they're passionate about. And it's the same thing with Bitcoin developers and Bitcoin builders. It's like they want to be around other people who are doing the exact same thing, so they can, you know, they can elevate their own skill set or their means of intellectual capital that they have for themselves. So I think that's just how I kind of look at it. And I just barely started understanding this, you know, late last year when, you know, because I think the last time we talked, I'd just taken over Pub Lab and all that kind of stuff. And now that I have time to actually not drown, I can actually look around and kind of see this stuff. I can really start thinking through this stuff and start writing it down, because a lot of this stuff is really precious. It's like a really interesting thing to witness. And I wish I could describe it another way, but I don't know if you've seen it, Brandon. Like you've seen what it looks like. It's special.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's interesting because, you know, obviously Jordan Peterson is who he is, but you know, you and Kyle, when you guys first started Pleb Lab, you know, you saw that in a sense too, right? You wanted to provide a space at Pleb Lab for people to kind of come together and, you know, make sure that all Bitcoiners can kind of help build in one central location. You know, so you were a little ahead of Jordan Peterson or ahead of that video that you saw there, Carr. So give yourself a little credit there too, man. But I mean, I agree with you too. I mean, you know, I'm like the
left side of the bell curve kind of guy. Like, I'm very slow. Like, I was talking to one of the guys here earlier today, and I was like, hang on, you're going too fast. Like, I can only think on, like, seriously, I can only really think like one thing at a time. And it's because I put all my focus on like this conversation that we're having, putting all my focus onto you and your questions, because I can't do multiple things at once. I'm really slow like that. So.
Man, it's all good. Multitasking is overrated, dude, because I think like it's all fragmented then at a certain point, right? And then you forget some things and you kind of get you kind of get fragmented thoughts and you get lost. I mean, that was like one of the things I talk to every time I come down there. I always say like the water cooler talk at Pleb Lab is something else, because you know, instead of just being like, you know, how is the game, it's you know, what are you working on? And then you know, the other people are kind of like, oh, wait, this will help me with my project. And then all of a sudden you see them both get on a whiteboard and all of a sudden they're just writing scribbles that I could barely understand. But then they come up with something awesome. So, you know, I think it's really cool to see. Yeah, it's really there's really something to that. That's like pretty, I guess, undervalued. But I think more people are kind of, I guess, catching eye to it, because it seems like a lot of, I guess, mini Pleb Labs are starting all over the place, it seems like. So it seems like you guys were kind of ahead of the curve, but you know, you're inspiring a lot of people in the Bitcoin space. So what you seeing that kind of stuff like start to pop up, whether it's, you know, Bitcoin Park, obviously everybody's got their own little twist to it, but all these other like unique little areas around the country and around the globe kind of popping up.
I was just real quick to that. I think that it's interesting, because like when you put yourselves in a situation where you have to think outside the box, because it either hasn't been done before or you can't get the support that you need for it, you get really inventive and really creative with how to look at it, right? And that's one of the things that I would say, like I used to get really bummed out. I'd be like, oh man, we can't get funding for this, we can't get funding. And now I look at it like an opportunity. I'm like literally looking at it like, cool. So I only have this much to work with, and I need to go and do this and this. And then before I know it, I figured it out. And I think it's because of like just having an artistic background. That's my background. It's just, you know, it's just artistry and trying to figure out hard things in really hard situations. And when you're able to look at things a little bit with a little bit more imagination and a little bit more kind of meticulous detail as to how to do it and the steps to get there and stuff like that. I think for me, that's probably why I take really long time to think through things, is because I have to like sit there and really think for a really long, hard time for like, how is it going to play out? Will it play out this way? Why will it play out this way? What are the touch points to it playing out this way? And I kind of play it like a movie in my head, if that makes any sense. And I don't know of anybody else that thinks like that, right? And so I think when I think through some of these hard situations, it's like, one of the biggest things I've been thinking through for like 6 months now is like, how do I bring Pleb Lab to every major city, every major town in the world? And I think I figured it out in my head, but I need to go and write it on paper and like think through it, then look at it again. Then once I get to a place where I think it's solvable, this is what's great about working at Pleb Lab. I can literally go to Keon and be like, hey, tell me I'm crazy. Tell me this is why it won't work. Right. Like, this is what I sketched out. Tell me why this won't work. I spent 6 months thinking it through. And he'll either say yes, yes, or no. And that's just kind of how I approach things at Pleb Lab, is before I do anything, I run it through the guys, run it through everybody here in the lab and kind of pitch them first. And if I could sell them on it, then it's an easier sell to everybody else.
Are they a hard sell? Is that what you're trying to say? Is like, or have you figured out how to sell them just yet?
No, it's not that it's a hard sell. It's just like when you have an idea, this is goes back to what Jordan Peterson was talking about, right? Like you want to hang out with other people that are smarter than you, right? And because you can take this idea and they can literally look at it six ways to Sunday and then like either flatten it down or say, no, that works. Because a lot of the times what you get in the Bitcoin space, and this is just me being honest, and I don't think I'm going to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's the truth. Most people you take to with an idea or anything like that, they'll look at it like, yeah, go ahead and do it. Like, yeah, it could work. They'll give you one of those, or they'll be like, no, yeah, sure. Or they just won't give you anything at all. And it's either one of five, six different things. And I, you know, it's very rare somebody will say, no, this is why it won't work, but it could. And this is what you should do to fix that. Have you looked at it this way? Should you do it this way? And I just come to realize in the Bitcoin space, most people just pat you on the back and tell you, oh man, you're killing it. You're doing a good job. And it's just like, that's it. And that's not a bad thing. It's just everybody's busy with their own stuff. But here at Plub Lab, we're designed to, you know, offer assistance, right? It's not required. It's optional. But I think you get more value when you can share these ideas with others. And especially if they can build up this idea and make it much greater than where it is, I think it's even better. But and I think that's why I think the Plub Lab is, and like some of these other hackerspaces are so valuable, is because they allow people to do that, right? Like I was talking to the ATL BitLab guys, and they're crushing it over there. Like they're doing these amazing, like these micro apps, right? With the bot that they're doing. It's so cool. I wish we could do that here. We just don't have that type of like thing that they have over there. It's just different here. So that's where I would say everyone's going to be a little bit different. Everyone's going to have a little style and a little flavor of its own. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. I would just say, if you do it, like make sure you have a thought out way of paying for it, because that could be hard.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you, I mean, like last time we spoke, I think on the pod, you were just recently taking over CEO at Pleb Lab. And so, you know, obviously, you know, it was kind of you're a first time CEO, first time founder, all that kind of stuff. But it's been a little bit of time now. You know, you said you have a little bit more time on your feet. You know, you're being able to, I guess, sit back and reflect now. And then maybe, you know, after this ETF, maybe we're getting out into the bull market. I don't know. We'll see what 24 has ahead of us. But, you know, it seems like everybody in the Bitcoin space is very amped up this year. But anyway, regardless, you know, being a CEO in a bear market is, you know, pretty difficult. And I'm sure you've learned a lot of lessons. So I'll leave you the floor here for you. Like, what are some of the valuable things that you think that you've learned, you know, throughout the past, I don't know, what is it, at least a year or so?
I think it's a little bit different, because this is like one of those times where, yeah, it was good to step in, because it was, we not only were we going through like a recession, but like also everything was just like the startup space, just in the tech ecosystem generally, the whole thing was just operating a different way than years past, meaning, you know, you were never going to see these types of crazy checks cut. Also with the AI stuff, a lot of jobs were getting cut and slashed. And so maybe somebody like myself was required to do 10 different jobs now. And it's not a surprise that, you know, I took over at the time that I did, and then was able to do a lot more roles, if that makes any sense, just because of what AI can give you and some of these other aspects. Obviously, we have support and help now, and we're doing really good as a small little team. But at the time, I remember thinking like, oh, wow, like, how is this going to work? Like, that's impossible to do all these tasks. Definitely has gotten easier. Definitely just, you know, just pure staying in the game, staying in the ring, whatever you want to call it. Like, you just get better at what you do just naturally. And typically just in my life, it's always taken me 6 months to get good, just like basic good at something. It's been well past 6 months now. I finally feel like I have my feet under me, and I definitely feel like I'm operating confidently now than I was 2 months ago. So I would say there's that. And I think just the more and more you stay in the game, the sharper you get, and you just know, yeah, you just inherently know what to do. And I think doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that's a measure to success or anything like that. I just think it just there's just, it's forced growth. Like you're forced to grow, and you either grow or you don't. And I've seen it 2-3 different ways. Just, and most people, like most Bitcoiners, will grow. Like they'll grow through it. But yeah, I got a long way. I'm like baby. I'm still a baby. I'm still learning how to walk and stuff. So,
well, I think, you know, on that point, right? I mean, it's kind of like the entrepreneurial.
The other thing I will say though, too, just, and this is the last point, is there's no one I can go to for advice. Like, And that's the thing I think I've come to realize, is like, who do I go to? I don't have Paul Graham like in my text message. Like, who do I go to for advice? Like, there's no one building anything like this, right? Luckily, I have a great relationship with the Wolf team, so I can ask them and bounce them off ideas. But other than that, who else can I absolutely talk to that's doing the same thing that we're doing for as long as we have?
Yeah, I mean,
there's not a lot of people. There's like maybe three people in the world, like Odell, Rod, and like Kelly and Brian from Wolf, and that's it. Like those four guys. Who else?
I mean, yeah, that's the positive and the negative of being a, you know, a pioneer in a space, right? I mean, you know, you're figuring it out as you go, right? You got to roll with the punches, but I think it's made you and, you know, Pleb Lab just very resilient, right? I mean, I think, you know, obviously coming out of, you know, whatever, if we're coming out of this bear market or not, I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, it seems like more and more people are, you know, getting eyes on Bitcoin and more things like what you're doing are popping up. And, you know, I guess success leaves breadcrumbs or trails or whatever you want to, whatever phrase you want to use. And it seems like a lot of people are starting to emulate and, you know, like what you guys are doing down in Pleb Lab. So I don't know, in my eyes, man, that's a win for you, I think, is like, you know.
Well, no, and I'll tell you why I don't look at those as wins. I'll tell you why. And it's not for the three reasons you probably think. It's because I've with Pleb Lab, I've taken a outside perspective now, if that makes any sense. And I think before, for the longest time since we started, I've always taken like a real personal, like coveted arrangement with the way I feel about Pleb Lab. And now I treat it more, since stepping into the role and then really understanding what this role really is, I kind of taken more of it like a removed position from it, as far as like letting it be what it wants to be. Like, if that, like letting others to inform me of what they think it is, and then really looking at it from like a really realistic approach. And I don't think I ever did look at it prior to early 2023. I did it. Like, I always looked at it more personally, like it was my baby. And I don't look at it like that anymore. I look at it as like, okay, what does it need to do to help the ecosystem? Like, what do I need to get Pleb Lab so we can start making contributions again to the ecosystem? Because I don't think we made that many contributions last year, to be honest. This is why I have like, have such a high bar with what I think we could possibly do here. And I don't even think we're even close to where I think we can be. And I think when I look at the future of Pleb Lab, it's like, okay, cool. Let's get us to a place where we're so healthy that we can actually start making like really great contributions to the space again. Because I don't think we did in 2023. And so that's kind of how I see it. But I think you have to look at it like that in order to have like a more objective, like mission first kind of mindset of what you want to accomplish with the company that you're having to run.
Yeah, I feel like what you're describing, I'm gonna use like a little bit of a metaphor, is like at first you're underwater and you're trying to get to the top. And now you feel like you got your head above water and now you're looking where to go, where to swim to, kind of thing. And then, you know, you're trying to get on that right path to get to, I don't know, wherever, shore or whatever it is. I don't know where exactly I was going with that full metaphor, but that's kind of, you know, the way I'm seeing it. But, you know, with that, I mean, it seems like you guys have had, you know, you have some big plans for 24. So I'll give you the floor here, man. What are some of the big plans you guys got? Because, I mean, when I was down there for Christmas break, or so to speak, I give you a little sneak peek, man. So I want to share that with the world.
That was a good steak, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We had a pleb for the audience at home. We had a pleb steak at Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah, shout out Texas Roadhouse, man. Not Texas
Roadhouse. They can cut a really good what is it, like what they call it, like a boot cut or something.
Yeah, something like that. Like, we got a little, I think I got a little surf and turf too. So I got a little shrimp in the steak. I think, you know, it was a good little time.
Yeah. So for 2024, the first thing that we're trying to, I mean, we have a lot of plans. I think just that the main focus right now is like trying to get to Top Builder. So Top Builder is this kind of like crazy idea that I pitched Wolf about, hey, what if there was a top chef for Bitcoiners? Like what would that look like? And so obviously we're not going to have all of them come here and live out of a house for 2 months and, you know, put you know, put, you know, whatever it would be every week and all this kind of, even though I want to get to that at some point, Brandon, I really do. Cause I really think they'd be the most watched show. Like I really do. I think it would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a sick reality show. You know, you see all these like just devs, just you get them on camera, just like up at like 2:30 in the morning, just typing away. Yeah, just,
people don't understand how they work. And it's fascinating to watch. It's, and the interactions to where their mind goes when they think through things and then how they get to the solvable part. It's like, oh, that's how they did it. Like they were talking about it, and then they're before you know it, they're here. And it's like, and then boom, whatever comes out of that. And it's like everybody uses it now. Like it, and when you see that, like that thing, it's just, it's like watching I don't know how to describe it. It's like watching an orchestra. Like it's just like seeing how all those interesting parts play together and how they're all just like, you know, doing their instrument. Anyway, Top Builder. We're doing that March 14th during South by Southwest. It's going to be here at the Bitcoin Commons, our neighbors, and we're going to have a full day of like panels. You're going to be there. You're going to be a moderator. I don't know if you know that yet. I think you do know that. Yeah. And then you've already agreed to it, Brandon. There's no going back.
Well, hey, now it's out there. So if I don't come up with my part of the bargain, everybody's gonna hate me. So I will be there. Don't worry. We'll have people with pitchforks outside of Green Candle. Like,
where is Green Candle?
Yeah, exactly.
Holding green candles. So like literally, we're gonna, and then from 2 to 5 that day during startup day, we're gonna have the Top Builder. So right now, dude, it's crazy. I think we had like 50 something submissions. I haven't checked today's, but I'm sure it's even more. So we had like 50 something submissions. I've interviewed over like 40 people at this point for Top Builder. I think we have a total of like 10 or 11 people that have actually gone through the whole process. And there is a whole, like, it was just a natural kind of like filtration thing to get them down to Top Builder. And it wasn't as hard as you think, but you can really find out a lot about a person and how enthused they are about project if they'll go through the next step, right? If they really are willing to go through the next step. And so a lot of what I saw drop off was at these different steps. And you would normally think like, oh no, you don't want to do that. You want to make sure it's easy for, no. For something like this, you definitely want to make sure that they actually really want to do it, because it's going to be intense, right? Like they're going up against some of these other builders that are really want to win this thing for different reasons, you know? And so this is going to be really cool. So during startup day, be a Top Builder event from 2 to 5, they'll present, the judges will judge. And then from 5 to 7, there'll be a small little mixer, you know, hangout. You'll be able to talk to Brandon and hear his thoughts on everything. And then it'll, from 7 to 9 will be Bit Devs, because Bit Devs is that evening. And then the people will announce the Top Builder. And then there'll be like a party afterwards, after Bit Devs, which is always a good time in Austin. And this is on during South by Southwest. And then the next day, the Bitcoin Commons is going to be doing the Bitcoin Takeover event. And that's going to happen on Friday. And they're going to have tons of panels there, and it'll be another party. And then I think there'll be other small events that happen during that week. We'll throw some, you know, some private events here, and we'll invite everybody and all that kind of thing. There'll be workshops. It's going to be a whole vibe, dude. It's going to be a whole vibe.
There's always like a startup day, you know, I mean, it was before Bitbog Boom last year. I was always, you know, it's always a good time. But, you know, I really resonated with a point that you said, the filtration system, about just getting somebody to follow up basically and like complete the next step. Because like, you know, back in my heyday when I was a good old grad student at the great University of Texas A&M, I was basically like, I don't know, working in a lab, and we would have undergrads come to interview to be in, you know, working under us, basically like help out, and they could get research credits or whatever. We would have like 50 or 60 people that we would interview. And then we would literally tell them like, hey, if you send one follow-up email after this, it will raise your chances significantly to get the position. And out of the 50 or 60, we would get maybe 4 or 5 follow-up emails, and we would give it to those 4 or 5 every single time. Because no matter, it's like, even if the interview was like, I mean, unless the interview was just absolutely atrocious, it's just the effort and the desire, I think, is like 90% of the battle before the skill. Because I just think, like, you know, there's something about having passion behind a project or, you know, trying to figure it out. It's like, you know, you can't really coach or, you know, teach somebody to have that passion to wake up in the middle of the day or middle of the night and, you know, have that aha moment and go and just, you know, type away, kind of like what we're describing at like 2:30 in the morning, just, you know, working tirelessly just to go to, it's like something that somebody is truly passionate about and, you know, really loves to do. And so that's what I'm most excited about. One is to see, you know, meet all these people, kind of hear their thought process behind the them building, and then also kind of like, you know, see the passion behind it, you know. And like, yeah. I always think it's like super inspiring to see something that somebody, you know, maybe dreamt of or thought about a little bit and then making it come to life and working extremely hard to do it too.
Yeah, I think for me, when I think through some of this stuff, it's like, what do I enjoy about the whole thing? It's just seeing, for me, it's seeing the transformation. Like, I really love seeing things come to life, especially when it like starts from an idea or like it has an inception from there, or just like a bounce off, you know, the wall type of idea, whatever it could be, and then seeing it transform into something, and then before you know it, you know, hundreds of people are using it or whatever, and it's seeing their reaction and seeing the wonderment behind it. To me, that always gets me every single time. And so no matter how many times I do this, I just like will always try to ingrain in my head what that looks like initially when they pitch it to me, and then seeing it, you know, 6 months, a year, whatever it takes, and then seeing the result of it. And for me, when I have a very good photographic memory, and so when I think those two things, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's, for me, that's what it's all worth. It's all worth it for that.
100%. Well, yeah. So where are you guys in this phase, right? I mean, you said you had like maybe 40 or 50 more. Is there room for, and you have like 10 in, right?
This going to be released next week, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, so yeah, if this gets released next week, then by that point, we have already killed submissions. So, dude, it was crazy. So we've been just hitting it hard this week with trying to get the word out there. So we've been seeing more and more submissions. And so I've been booking more and more of these calls, which I'm glad to, it's an opportunity to, and then we have like, I think Bitcoin Magazine published, I think Shinobi Punish published something today for PlubLab. You know, one of our people was able to get it there. So shout out Shinobi for, you know, caring about the builders and stuff like that. So I think even more is going to come from that. And then, so we're going to kill submissions at midnight on the 13th, which is Friday, you know, or Saturday at midnight. And then from there, we'll onboard the rest of them, and then we'll start working with them so they can achieve their milestones. The way we have it set up is where every project that's coming in, they have, like I said, they have a lot of them see success in a lot of different ways, whether that's like trying to get a grant from OpenSense or from HRF, or if that's trying to get pre-seed funding, or if that's trying to go to Wolf, right, and do it big, or if that's just trying to bootstrap a Bitcoin business over the course of 5 to 10 years, we want to help them do that. We want to help them do all these things, right? So whatever success looks like to them. And so a lot of these different projects have different aspirations and a lot of different avenues and where they see their projects going, and they see themselves going into this kind of Bitcoin ecosystem, because now it's a very fruitful environment, especially what we were just talking about earlier. Not only that, but just kind of where we're sitting. Like I think before, I don't remember seeing builders and devs get this amount of respect before, but they definitely are now. And it's really cool to see. So they're going to be able to pick the avenue that they want to go in. And we want to help them do that. And so we'll have the first round going from January 13th to February 10th. We'll cut those teams in half. And then for the next 14 days, they'll set more milestones. We'll cut those teams in half. And we'll get it down to like 4 or 5 or 6 and bring them to Austin. And they'll pitch for top builder. You'll be there. And then...
Yeah.
And then we'll literally see, this is where I was telling you, right? Like, I love meeting these people and seeing what they turn into, because now I'll have that first conversation that I had with them, and then to see their reaction and face when they win top builder. For me, that's what it's really about. It's just like, wow. Saw them, you know, rise to the occasion and just like get it. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's awesome stuff. Well, where can people follow along? Is it going to be, you know, obviously... Yeah. Twitter and that kind of stuff, or
So another thing we're doing workshops every weekend. So we'll have like 3 workshops this weekend, and then every week after that we'll have about 2 workshops. One will be on the Bitcoin business startup side, and then the other side will be like a technical workshop, right? And so we have like people like from Moritz from Albi, or if it's like Darina from Slice, or you know, whoever it is, Topher from BitEscrow, it doesn't matter. We're gonna show it, and hopefully this will help the builders get to where they need to be for their projects. Obviously all that stuff's optional, but we want to get it out there, get that content out there. And then also, I think at some point we will see just more and more coverage of this. And we have some ideas of how we're going to do that here in the months leading up to Top Builder on the 14th, but just kind of wait and see. I would say follow like YouTube, follow Plub Lab there on YouTube, follow our Twitter on Noster, Zapstream. I mean, we're literally everywhere. We might even have a LinkedIn. I don't know.
I think you guys do have LinkedIn. I've been tagged in like the comments, like LinkedIn posted too recently. So yeah, I mean, you guys are everywhere. So yeah, definitely check them out. And the promotional videos, you guys, if you haven't seen them already, you got to go back and watch.
Logan's killing it, dude. He just has, oh man, I'm so glad I met that guy when I met him. He's just brilliant. I can't say enough good things about Logan, but just seeing his progress and like what he's capable of doing now, it's just like today where he came by and he was just like, we were just like talking through some stuff and he's like, yeah, what are you thinking for this thing? And then I was just kind of, we were like going back and forth. And there's really, it's interesting because like there was a time where like I would have to lead that conversation in the early days. Now I don't. Now it's just like he's bouncing this thing off of my head and I'm thinking through it. And I was like, wait. And then there was a moment where me and him connected like mentally without saying anything. And I was like, did you know you were doing that? Like, did you know you were doing this? He goes, of course I did. I was like, oh my God. It like blew my mind because he didn't have to say anything. I literally just like looked at him, saw him for like 5 seconds. And I was like, like what? So it's really cool because like, this is a friendship and like, you know, business relationship that we've been growing for what, as long as the one that me and Kyle had, right? It was just as long, like, you know? And so it's really cool to have that thing now with him where I'm just like, just amazed with what he brings. So anyways, can't say enough great things. Also, I should shout out Teresa Martin's an angel. She's come and helped Plub Lab and a lot of ways and been able to really get us to where we need to be, get me personally where I need to be. Also Julie, who's been stepping up and helping us too as well. BTC Retriever, he's just been killing it on the design stuff. Scoresby is another guy, and then everybody in the lab willing to give their time to see Plub Lab, you know, stick around. So it's an honor to do this gig. Really is.
Yeah, it's a great community you have at Plub Lab and a lot of great people helping you out. I mean, I've had the chance to meet all of them and it's, you know, it's awesome. Every time I go back to Austin, I always get super bullish. I tell you that. I always get jacked up every time I talk to you.
Get ready to run track or something?
Yeah,
or?
Exactly, dude. I don't know, man. Maybe just like ghost. I'll do like, you know, something like would smash my head through a wall or something like that. I don't know, man. You just get hyped up. Yeah, but everybody needs to go check out Plub Lab. If you haven't already, go to their website, go check them out. If you want to take a course or do something like that, there's nothing I can't recommend more than checking out Plub Lab and everything that they got going on. So, and Carr, you're always the man. And thank you so much for your time and hopping on the show, man.
I also just want to say thank you, Brandon. Let me just talk to your audience for a second. I don't know if you realize, Green Candle listeners, but this guy cares so much about just everybody. Sometimes more than I see that he should care more about what he's working on. But this guy is legend. I don't think people realize just how much like tenacity he has and with the guests and everything that you do, Brandon. Like listeners, if you're out there listening to this, like Brandon works his ass off for y'all. So hopefully you appreciate him. Definitely zap him.
Thanks, Carr, dude. I always appreciate that, dude.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart, man. You're a legend in my heart.
I couldn't do it without your support, man, and the support of all the listeners and everything like that. So, I mean, I enjoy it, so I want to keep doing all this stuff, and I'm going to. So, there we go. Big things ahead in 2024 for the both of us, man. I can feel it, man. I can feel it.
Yeah, you're going to be – yeah, dude, your star is rising, like Nick Harlan said.
My star will continue to rise, right? All right, man. Thanks so much.
All right.